This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Thank you for making our show a possibility.
Thank you. Thank you.
Making us sane. Thank you.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
Let me show you. Love is love. If you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional ride. If these ovaries could talk, you would say. How do I get the sperm through customs?
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
It's not for the gay reason. Just
because
we stay.
Here we are again.
Here we are. Just two more. This one and one more, Jamie.
It's still the old ovaries.
It's still our old dusty ovaries. They're still kicking out some eggs like this.
Oh, God. That's like not... Ew.
More like...
Ew. Oh my God.
Because they're old.
It's not okay. It's not okay. Oh my God.
Okay. It's a little okay.
I don't know if that was okay. But hi guys. It's so nice to have you all here again.
Yes.
I want to let you all know because Robin's job her new job has literally started and she's super busy. We had to batch record these last three episodes. So I know in the last episode, last Monday,
This is like a continuation of a TV show. In the last episode.
I know. In the last episode, I asked you all, please give me your feedback and email me and all the stuff about you know, how you want these ovaries to go forward. But full disclosure here, that episode hasn't even aired yet while we're recording.
That hasn't
right
happened.
Now.
This is like a time loop.
This is like
that hasn't happened yet.
So
in
I
our
haven't
world.
Gotten your feedback. Even though by the time this episode airs, I will have your feedback. And I'm sure it's amazing feedback. And I'm enjoying reading it all or hearing it all. But I don't have
it yet. In fairness, it's going to take you a minute to implement any feedback. So
well, no,
I think,
no, no, no. Yeah.
I think slow your roll.
But just so as you know, I do plan on being fully transparent about this whole transition. And so please just make sure you're following
as opposed to ovaries. Hiding it.
Yeah. Well, obviously. But like, I'm going to talk about it with you all, and I'm going to ask for your feedback and your help and guidance in this, and probably cry a little bit, a lot, maybe like a lot. But like, you know, if
let's
you're not
try not to cry too much,
it's too late. But if you're not following our social media, go there and follow, because I'll be talking about all of this on the social for show.
And I will be just crying in a regular day job. And you still have to go to my social at Real Rob Hops also, because I'm going to miss you all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hit it to our newest Patreon members. We got two new people coming
in. Thank you guys so much.
Jenny H. And I can't say, there's no way I can say this last one, so I'll just let you do it. Hilborn Birch. Emma Hilborn Birch.
That's a cool last name.
It is. That sounds like an author.
Yeah.
Jenny H. Emma. Jenny H. sounds like she's a doctor and she doesn't really want you to know more about her than she's that. It's just Jenny H.
Thank you guys so much. We love you. We really love you.
And if you also want to help make this amazing content for LGBTQ families, you can join the Patreon community and do just that. You're going to do a good thing, which we always say, and you're going to get some bonus content. And at the gestational carrier level, you're going to get video interviews. Most episodes dropped a day earlier. Just got to head over to patreon.com/ovariestalk to join.
Yeah. And now is a really good time to do that. Really.
Sure is.
Seriously. It's a really great time. All right. Let's talk about our guest. Robin, you want to intro this guest? Because this is also a friend of yours.
I just met Lynn through a contact of a friend of mine, Tom, and she is amazing. Her name's Lynn Bader, and she's an executive producer over at the WNED. She's doing the public work, which is important. She's a mom of twins, and she made it through kids, a divorce, new love, a big career, through it all. I mean,
she's done a lot. She's done it all. And she's a firecracker. And I really enjoyed talking with Lynn.
We laughed so hard during this.
Yeah, Lynn is fun. So you guys are going to really enjoy this interview. So let's just, you know what? Let's just get to it because
No, hold on. I practiced this with Helen.
Okay,
Helen?
Let's see.
Okay, Helen, remember, we're working up to doing the job, right? You got it? Roll the tape.
She's really trying to get Helen to step it up for me.
Helen?
She's not going to do it. She's not going to do it. She's
all right. You're just going to have to fire her.
I appreciate the effort. I'm never going to fire Helen. Helen will be with us forever. I just might have to get a real assistant.
I was going to say, my biggest fear is she wants to come with me to my freelance job, and I'll be like, oh, sorry, there's no space. No room, Helen.
No, she really believes in this content, so I think she's going to stick around with Ovary.
Well, we're going to be fighting over Helen. That's hilarious. Hi, Lynn. Welcome.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Robin. Hi, Jamie.
This is so exciting to have you.
I know. As soon as I became your new number one fan, I was like, I don't have time to listen to all 100 and God knows how many episodes. But, you know, I had a story I could relate.
In our email exchange, wow. She was like, here's my story. And I was like, yes, let's have a meeting. And also, please be on the podcast.
Yes.
Then I was like, oh, wait a minute. So I had to talk to my family and kind of clear it with them. And
well, that's the responsible thing to do.
They were all good.
You got older kids. It's like no longer your story. It's their story too.
Oh yeah. And about, you know, those preteenage years is when they start to let you know. It is no longer your social media. It is,
they get photo approval.
They get photo approval.
My gosh. Yes. I'm not there yet. I'm so far from there, Lynn. I can't even... I'm scared of this. I'm so scared because I have laid it all out there.
Well, I thought I was doing fine. And one day I went on Facebook and I made a post about my son. And it was, you know, it was one of those days that we have as moms where we just want to go running and screaming from the house. And so I make this post and it's funny and whatever. And a colleague of mine sent me a private message. Now, he has an older son and he said, hey. You might want to back off a bit, like cut your kids some slack and maybe not post it. And it was that moment that I thought,
But I love that your colleague wasn't just like telling you not to post. They were also being like, hey, ease up on your kid, which is also like, hey, you stay in your lane. Okay.
I know. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, you come walk in my shoes. Yeah, you haven't been in my shoes in years.
Right.
Come
mind
walk
your in business. My
shoes. Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right.
Elevator
this, if you can't tell, this is going to be a chatty episode, which we love.
She just moved us along.
She's a producer.
Lynn was like, okay, elevator pitch. Let's go.
Okay. On your mark, get set, go.
Hi, I am Lynn and I am from Buffalo and I'm the proud mom of two 17, almost 18 year old children. And it started a long time ago when I knew I wanted to be a mom at the age of 10, but I never imagined that my story was going to take the turn it took in terms of my fertility and then figuring out that I was going to be super efficient and have two kids at one time.
Woo!
Yeah.
Done in 25 seconds.
Efficient. Lynn. So we got a lot to dive in here. We'll take a collective deep breath and get going.
Ready?
All right.
Okay.
All right. So tell us about, I mean, you knew you wanted to have kids at 10, but obviously it might have taken a turn there. Was there a lesbian thing that popped in there?
There was a little lesbian thing that popped in there. And so while I saw myself always having kids, I never pictured myself married, right? So, right, and I always wondered, like now I look at that and I think, because married then meant to a guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I could never see that for myself. And so that should have been a red flag. Mm-hmm. All the girl crushes should have been red flag. Mm-hmm. The fact that, you know, in most of my school pictures, I look like a little boy and dirty with a baseball bat in my hand and a hammer in the other. Like, those should have been red flags.
A tool belt
in the other. Yes.
But if you don't see it mirrored back to you, you don't have any idea that that's a possibility.
And when you grow up in a very sort of a strict conservative Catholic household, when you do see it, and you saw it very little in the media, it was always this odd, demented, strange thing that you don't want to be associated with that. And so I would say, you know, I did not come out until I was 27.
Mm, wow.
But back in the late 80s and early 90s, that wasn't uncommon.
That was the way it was. I was 22. Like, and it was 90s, early 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, I was
22. And I wish, you know, I look at my kids today and I look at the world that we sort of live in, and I constantly am sort of analyzing how far have we come really and how much further do we have to go and all that kind of stuff. But I knew I wanted children. And so thankfully, I did not get pregnant with any of the other relationships that I did have before then.
They were not gay relationships.
They were not gay relationships. And I love all the guys I dated. Like, you know, I'm still friends with most of them. So
you still do some construction work with most of them.
Well, maybe. I don't know. At least we're friends on Facebook and they sort of see my life. And so when I did get together with my partner at the time, she's no longer my partner. She came from a kind of a troublesome childhood and said, I don't want kids. I can't. I don't think I'll be a good mom. Like, I don't think I can do this. And I thought, okay, we didn't talk about this. Why didn't we talk about this? This was silly. And I said, look, I want to be a mom. I've always wanted to be a mom. And I really just want to be a mom. And why can't we? So she finally sort of came on board.
And you were, how old were you at this? This is 27 when you first came out.
Did
you come out with this person?
Yes.
Like, this person was the catalyst
for coming out.
This was
the catalyst for coming out. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's more that we will get into regarding my coming out.
Again, a producer. She's teasing act two.
I'm teasing you.
She's got the storyline all thought through.
Okay. We just have to be here, Jamie. That's it.
I know. I'm going to sit and listen.
I love it.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So I was probably in my 30s at this point. Well, yeah, I know I was. I was getting up there around 34 when my ex and I were ready to take this step. And I knew that I was going to go first because I was like 4 years older than her. She had no interest in carrying a child whatsoever. And I was fine with that. She was like, look, you go ahead, push. I know you can't see me because we're on a podcast, but Lynn, you go ahead. You tell me how it goes. Right. And, exactly. And we decided that when we weighed all of our options financially, there's no way. Like, I've heard some of your episodes where I'm going to have my egg and you're going to take my egg and where it's going to be, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be genetically both our children. And there's this big hang up about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we said, yeah, we'll never have kids because that's like thousands and thousands of dollars. And that's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I was artificially inseminated and we went through a large sperm bank in, I think, Boston.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. That was a fun process.
She just cheers us.
For the button on the segment. I love it.
Right, exactly. And so I was artificially inseminated. What do you want to know about that?
Well, it was IVF or IUI. It was IVF.
No, IUI. IUI. Yeah. It was IUI. Oh. Mm-hmm.
And the picking the donor, was that difficult?
That was really hard. Like, you go on their website, like on their database, and you're like, oh my God, where do we even begin to choose? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we wanted the donor to have my features. I had three basic requirements. The guy had to be tall. Mm-hmm. He had to be thin and he had to be smart.
Okay.
Because I am short and overweight. And I was like, we all want smart kids, right? Yeah, like that's a no brainer. So, right. So, we've narrowed it down and we got what they call long profiles from 10 different donors.
So you paid extra money
for the longer profiles for 10 guys. And I remember sitting and looking over all of them. They were spread out on the bed and like we were looking at them all. And we literally like one by one, no, this guy beats this guy. So this guy goes over here. And then this guy up here is great. This guy goes over here. And we had the final four. And I still have those long profiles in a file. And you can see on the top, it says final four in black Sharpie underlined.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
And so the donor that we ended up choosing was like 6 foot tall, dirty blonde hair, hazel eyes, wavy hair, like 170 pounds. And he had a law degree and an architecture degree.
Ooh.
Ticked all the boxes.
But he was blind as a bat. He couldn't see. His family had terrible eyesight. And like, we struggled over this.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because you nitpick every little thing. The search for Superman. That's what it is.
It is. Yeah, exactly. And so we chose him and he's an identifiable donor.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Meaning they can contact him at 18.
Yes.
And he can choose to respond.
What's interesting is your kids are about to be 18, which we haven't really talked to a lot of people in that place. Mm-hmm. Are your kids and their twins, are they interested in, and are they both coming from the same place in identifying him?
I think they are interested. Mm-hmm. And I think that it was funny because I was talking to my daughter the other day and we were joking about how they were going to be 18 and how, you know, there's some things that they still do and they act 10. Like, how have you not figured out yet that blah, blah, blah. You're going to be 18 in 2 months. And when are you going to figure this out? And she says, I'm going to get to vote. I'm going to be able to vote when I'm 18. Huge, huge. I think it's the biggest thing about becoming 18 is that you finally have some political voice. Yep. Mm-hmm. And she said, hopefully I'll have my driver's license because she's been lagging on that one. And I might be going away to college. And I get to try to contact my donor.
Wow.
Like that was one of the things.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
So do they know any siblings, donor siblings? So,
no, we don't know. Okay. I have not gone down that road. Okay. I've listened to other shows where, you know, and I have friends, as a matter of fact, their pediatrician is gay, has a wife, they have kids. And they have gone that route where they have gone to these like sibling reunions where everybody gets together. I'll cross that bridge when I get to it.
Okay.
If I get to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you might not.
You might not. And it might be for them to do. Like they're about to be 18. But you know, it's their journey.
Yeah. But you know, I feel like you have a right. You did not choose to be artificially inseminated into your lesbian mother. That was not your choice. You know what I mean? Like you just didn't make that decision. And I think it really came from a place where I'm adopted and my ex-partner was also adopted.
Oh.
And when I was 21, I found my birth mother.
Ooh.
Oh.
And so it was just always really, really important to me that they have that option at least available to them.
Can we talk about the parallels or the differences between your adoption story and then your kids' donor-conceived story?
Yeah. So my adoption story, like I'm adopted. I'm the oldest of five kids and three of us are adopted. So I remember seeing my mother pregnant for the very first time when I was like nine.
Oh,
yeah. That was not how kids came to our house.
They just showed up.
Somebody just dropped them off.
Like a puppy.
And I had two foster brothers as well. So of my siblings, my brother has chosen not to find his biological parents and my sister found her biological mother and it was not a good reunion.
Right.
So I was very blessed and very lucky that my mother, and she ultimately earned the title. You know, I did find her. I was 21 and it was kind of a whirlwind kind of a thing for me, but it provided that closure. And I always wanted to look, right? I always wanted to find her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I am still, you know, very close to that family, my birth family and my adoptive family. Mm-hmm. And there was a big pothole in the road on that journey. When I came out, my birth mother and I stopped talking for a number of years. Yeah, she was not cool.
Because not only did you have to deal with now your family, you have to deal with your biological, you have even more people to have to come out to.
I had more family to deal with, to come out
to. And more opportunities for loss.
Yes.
Yeah. And so she did not handle it well. But, you know, I think the way it comes full circle is when I decided that I was going to have a family and I got pregnant and I was carrying the twins, I reached back out to my mother and said, look, can we just please bury whatever hatchets we have going on? And can we, it's been a number of years. Can we be grown-ups here? Because you're going to have grandkids. And I really want them to know you and I want them to be in your life and vice versa. And my kids had the opportunity to become super close to her.
Aww.
And yeah, she passed away a few years ago, but it was like, for me, it was the best possible outcome to be able to show her that the decision she made so many years ago was the right decision at the time.
Yeah.
And that we could come full circle.
I could cry.
That's so wonderful.
You just make me want to cry. How about how your family, I don't know, what do you call them? Your adoptive family? My family.
Yeah. They're my family.
Yeah. How were they about your origin story? And were they really open from the start? How did that all pan out? And did it dictate the way you raised 100%. Your children?
100%. I think they treated the whole thing with a lot of respect and dignity. And so I remember on my 18th birthday, my parents sat me down and they were like, okay, so you're 18 now and you can do whatever you want. Here is your information. Here is what we know about your birth mother.
Was that the first time you were seeing the information?
The first time I was seeing the information. I grew up knowing I was adopted. That is a struggle for kids, you know, adopted kids. They have baggage. Yeah. They just inherently have baggage. There's an inherent trauma and there is this void of the unknown.
Yeah.
Hmm. And kids that comes from families like ours will often have that similar void. Yeah. Like it's just something we all have to deal with as parents, right? But literally all they had on her was like the size of my cell phone. It was like a 3x5 card.
Right.
Wow. Here's what we know.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, where's the rest?
Yeah. Like I was really expecting a folder perhaps.
Yeah, this is it. This is it. But they were super. And I remember after I found her, she came to where I lived at the time. I mean, I was living at home and stuff like that. So she came and she met my parents and ultimately my parents went down to where she lives and, you know, the sides of the family got to meet each other. And that was really, you know, that was kind of cool. I think I will never know what that must have been like, or I didn't know what that must have been like until I had kids of my own.
Mm. Yeah.
To have my two mothers, one who raised me, one who birthed me.
Yeah.
Standing in the same room together. Yeah. Right. So it did dictate like an identifiable donor was one of those non-negotiables. Like when you're buying a house, right.
Yeah.
Non-negotiable has to be an identifiable donor.
Right.
And, you know, my ex-partner ultimately found the location of her mother, but her mother had already passed. And this actually just happened recently. I think it was about, you know, also preserving the notion that, you know, no matter how your children come into the world, the people that raise them are the people who are who their parents are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So my kids, I think, have three parents. Like, I birthed them and raised them. My ex was in their life or still is in their life, but was, you know, in there during those first few years until they were about six. And then my current wife came in like the saint that she is when they were preteens and said, yeah, I'll try this out.
God bless her.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to the thread a little bit of where you, you picked your donor and then it sounds like you got pregnant pretty darn easily with two.
Well, okay. So I had never had regular periods in my life. I just sort of glossed over. Yeah. So I was never regular. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we know, as lesbian folk, we have to go to this, a doctor and say, so I want to have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So my health insurance was great because I'd had these irregular periods. And so there was a lot of testing that had to be done anyway. And I ended up going on, there's one drug, I can't remember the name of it now, that's very popular. A lot of women go on it.
Clomid.
Yes. And it did wacky things for me.
Yes.
Really?
Like, I was visual. Same. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like visual disturbances and stuff. So I was on it a couple of months. Yes. Wow. I would look at the vertical blinds and then I would look back and like, I would look and the vertical blinds would be animating. What? It was really, really strange. Whoa. So I called my doctor and he said, all right, look, we need to get you on something else. I'm doing this trial with a doctor friend of mine in Canada. Yeah.
It's fun to hear.
In Canada. And, you know, I'm in Buffalo. So like Canada's like literally, I can almost see it from my office window. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to send you over to that doctor. I'm going to call him. He's going to write you a script for something called Femara.
Uh-huh. I know
Femara. You guys are familiar with Femara, right?
Yes.
Prescribed it. Yeah. It's a breast cancer drug.
Yes.
That got me regular, right?
Oh.
And so, you know how they, well, you know, they test you. You feel like you just get tested to death. Mm-hmm. But then they pick the day and they say, all right, they call me up. Lynn, we got your lab results. You need to come in on Sunday. Sunday's your day. We're going to inseminate you and let's see how it goes. Well, I had a shoot on Sunday.
I'm a very busy businesswoman.
So I was producing a documentary on Fort Niagara, which is like 45 minutes north of here. And we literally had planned this shoot day for months. It involved reenactors. It involved like 30 people in the woods and we were shooting off muskets and, you know, cannonballs and stuff. And I just said, can we do it on Saturday? And the doctor says, well, but Sunday's your day. And I said, yeah, but can we do it on Saturday? And they said, we will schedule you for the last appointment on Saturday, like 5 o'clock at night, you know. And my partner and I show up and we were the last ones in. They're ready to turn the lights off. The janitor's waiting. Like, can we hurry this up, please? And I go in and I was artificially inseminated on Saturday evening. And it was just like, okay, this is what we do. We've been through all of this. And all day Sunday, I'm sitting there with all those reenactor men.
Cannons.
Guns a-blazing.
Muskets a-shooting.
And all I can think is, I might be pregnant right now.
Yeah, totally.
I had that same exact feeling. I remember after the insemination, sitting on a park bench and being like, there's sperm in there. And I was like, that's so weird. I was like, that's so weird.
I could be getting pregnant right now.
Well, you know,
and then the director would look at me and go, Lynn, are we ready to shoot the next scene? Oh, yeah, okay.
You're like, I'm busy with the miracle of life right now. Thank you very much.
You have no idea. I'm contemplating things. There's so much more going on inside me right now than
I'm creating a human.
Two humans.
Exactly.
Creating two humans.
And I didn't know that at the time. So literally, like, you know, a number of days later, they test you to see if you're pregnant because they test you. And I was 35 at the time. Yes, I was 35. So I was in this like high risk group, right? And I say that with quotes because we all know what that's like.
They call it geriatric.
Geriatric pregnant women. Mm-hmm. And we did an ultrasound and they were looking for a dot. Uh-huh. And it was during the middle of the workday. So I had to leave work and all my girlfriends here at work were like, oh, let us know how it goes. We're going to pray for dots. We're going to pray for dots. And I was like, okay, that's great. So I go and we have the ultrasound and my ex is standing there and I'm laying there and the lady doing the ultrasound says, okay, well, I think I see a dot. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, no way. That was the first time we had bought 6 months worth of tries. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. A minute later, she says, and here's another dot.
Wow.
And you're like, yeah. Excuse me?
What? And my ex starts to cry because she's always wanted twins and blah, 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 blah.
Aww.
And I started to cry because I was scared. Can I say shitless on this podcast?
Yeah, you sure can.
I was so frightened. Immediately, I thought, how am I going to do this? But so anyway, so I go back to work and I've got my little ultrasound pictures and my girlfriends are waiting in the conference room upstairs.
Aww.
And they were like, Lynn, how did it go? How did it go? And I come in. My one friend, Gwen, says, so did they find a dot? And I looked at them and I held up the picture and I went, they found dots.
They did say they were praying for dots.
And my best friend, Wendy, said, oh, my God, look at you, you overachiever.
Yeah.
And I just I said, I think I'm having twins. Like, I think the next few weeks are going to be really funky. And, you know, you don't want to be spreading the news too long. But they say I'm having twins.
Holy shit.
Holy cow.
I know. It was crazy. Oh. It was crazy. And, you know, when you have twins, your doctor takes you out at like 28 weeks or some craziness. And I had to tell my bosses much earlier than I really had wanted to, but we were just, you know, we were super thrilled and I was super thrilled. And I have a picture of myself like 3 days before they were born in front of the house, like side profile shot. And I was a house. I myself was a house. I was so huge, but I ended up having, at 29 weeks, I went into premature labor.
Ooh.
Yeah. And they stopped it, but I ended up in the hospital for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Cause you want to get to what? 32, 34 weeks.
You want to really get at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the lungs. So and for a go getter like you, that's torture, huh?
Oh my gosh. So it was hard. I had to learn. I really had to learn what they meant by bed rest. Oh, but you know what they do? I don't know if either of you have gone through this or whatever, but the first thing they do, the first day I'm there, scared to death and thankful that I haven't had these kids, they gave them the shots for their lungs and all that kind of stuff, is they wheel me up to the NICU and they show me what a 2-pound baby looks like.
Oh.
And I was,
it's like scare tactics.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Because and so they want immediately, you to stay put.
Yeah. I said, I will do whatever you tell me to do. Oh. I will not veer from your plan. I will follow your directions 100%. And I ended up staying in the hospital for 3 weeks to get to 32 weeks. And then the insurance company said, this is a perfectly healthy woman sitting in our hospital bed. We're not going to pay for that no more.
Oh, insurance.
And they sent me home. Yeah. So I managed 4 more weeks at home.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
So, but you were on bed rest for like 7 or 8 weeks.
Yeah. That was brutal. I missed my own baby shower. My baby shower was scheduled for the day that I ended up in the hospital and my ex had to go. It was right here in the building, actually, all my family and friends. And, you know, I think back on that day now and people called me on the phone and stuff, but like, I wish that we had had, like, I don't even know if Skype was around. Like, I wish there would have been a way. Like, look what we're doing now, right?
I know, right?
Although I will say this, shower. I was just going to say to you, I think you actually avoided it. I have been to a Zoom baby shower. Oh. And it is one of the most uncomfortable experiences because no one's saying anything and everybody's just kind of like, are you scared? It's awful. Yeah. It's awful. Yeah.
So, or everybody's talking at the same time.
Yeah. So you got the presence. You didn't have to go do weird shower games. I don't know. It feels like a little bit of a win.
Robin, you've changed my whole outlook on that memory of my
life. I'm here for you, Lynn. I'm here for you.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So I did have them. My water, like seriously, it was a great pregnancy up to that point. And then I remember I went to the doctor and I had gained like 10 pounds in 7 days and my blood pressure was up. And so he said, we're just going to make an appointment. You're done. You're going to be at 36 weeks on Sunday. So let's make an appointment for Tuesday. We're going to have these kids. Oh, this is great. This was the Friday before.
Yeah.
So I looked at my ex and I said, we are getting out of the house. I said, I see the light at the end of this tunnel. I need to leave this house. And we went to the mall and we went mall walking. Like I walked the mall. Gigantic Lynn walks the mall sitting at every bench because that was exhausting. Oh. And on Sunday morning, I'm in the shower and my water breaks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter, Ellie, she was in the NICU for one night, but Eli came out guns ablazing. He was ready to go.
All right.
And just do this world. And it's so funny because, you know, you talk about your kids and parenting. My kids are exactly who they were the day they were born.
Yeah.
Like today.
Oh my God. Exactly, yeah. Mine too. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mine too. Ugh. I mean, they're still little humans. We're still figuring them out, but I think it's the same.
The personalities for us too. Are right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jamie, how old are yours?
8 and 4.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
And Robin, yours are like what, 13?
About to be 11 and 13. Yeah.
11 and 13.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
God bless you. God Ooh. Bless you, ladies.
Now, you've alluded several times to this ex business. You got the twins. Well, what happened there?
You know, I think that
as much as you like want to share, obviously.
Sure. Like a lot of relationships. I think that we were just not meant to be together forever. We were not suited to be together forever. And I think that that's fine. I think now she would probably agree with that. I think at the time, you know, we were not modeling what a good marriage or good couple or set of parents should be for their kids. Mm-hmm. And it took me, like, I could put up with it when it was just myself. And I think we both sort of put up with it as long as there weren't any other humans involved.
Right.
And the day that my daughter started mimicking back the language and the tone, it was really more the tone that she heard coming from my ex at me, to me, I said, okay, this is, we're done. And, you know, I think I did share with Robin on a pre-call that at one point I sat there, was doing some dishes, and I said, can I do this 13 more years? And it was more like, can I do this to them?
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Well, cause first I don't know that I'd have survived it. Like I was really just, it was just a, you know, a bad relationship, and you know what those can be like. Right. Yeah. So what I want more for my kids than anything is to understand and to be able to have healthy relationships with whoever they want to. And I was not showing them that as an example on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people say stay together for the kids.
No.
And I say that is a very rare case where that is a good choice.
Yeah.
I feel like stay together for the kids and then watch your kids as they struggle through therapy as adults.
Yeah. And you're so much better off splitting up and being responsible and amicable co-parents than you are staying together and modeling a bad relationship. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
Right. But I mean, parenting twins in those early years, you guys, a lot of it's a blur. The first 4 years are kind of a blur.
Can only imagine.
And, you know, I look at my parents who had 5 kids and I think, okay, I just don't even know how that happened. I don't know how we all are, you know, normal, regular, productive members of society right now.
I think the same thing all the time. How did they do it? How did the ones that had multiple kids do it? I can barely handle my 4-year-old. Like, really?
Yes.
So then let's go forward. So the twins are 4. You're having a little reckoning about your relationship. And then what happens?
So we split up and she moves out. She doesn't remarry because at that point marriage wasn't legal. Right. So we never did have a legal marriage. But she, at that point, it was legal in New York State. By the time we split up, it was legal in New York State. And so she got married to someone that she just met. It was like a really brand new relationship, you know? Okay. And I was like, hey.
Good for you.
Mazel tov. Yeah. Great. Go.
Okay.
You know, have.
Bait it.
Go have peace in your life. That's awesome. And I was a single parent for a few years. And that was ridiculously hard.
So you guys didn't so she kind of just like left the scene.
You had main custody?
I maintained sole custody.
You never did the second parent adoption with her.
Oh, we did do the second parent adoption. So, okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I don't know. Back then, there were all kinds of hoops we had to jump through.
Yeah.
Still.
Right. To make sure that our, we had rights to our children. I had to give up my biological rights as their biological mother and co-parent adopt them with my ex.
Oh, that's different. That's different. Than what we do now.
Yeah,
just that one is of different. Us has to adopt.
Yeah.
We don't have to
get up rights. So it was a little bit weird for me, but at the same time, we went on this journey together at that point, and I wanted her to have the rights to the children, no matter what kind of parent I thought she was. Yeah. Like, you know, that's kind of just the way it goes. And so for the first number of years, it was, you know, it was rough. And, you know, like co-parenting was not something that I did well at all. Mm-hmm. I did not do that well. I didn't have any desire to co-parent. And if that makes me a bad human being, I'm sorry. Like we all have flaws.
Well, but that was part of the reason you left. So it's, that would be difficult.
I couldn't. Yeah. Like I couldn't literally be in that same space and had to preserve my own sort of sanity and health, needed to be like, I'm going to parent y'all here and you're going to get visits with her and that's going to be great. And whatever you guys do is fine. And I'm not going to keep you from her. But we're not going to go to the park together. like we're just not.
How was it? And how was it being like, if you were to say, I was hoping that we would have this rule for parenting. Can you do that as well? Or were you just like, what happens in our house? This is how I parent. You're going to get another version of parenting over there.
More the latter. I mean, I think that there were a few times where my ex and I would sit down and talk about things and, you know, 90% of the time we would disagree on the approach. Mm. And so it was tough. And I, you know, I mean, I hope the kids understand that there are lots of different ways that you can be a parent, and it's up to you now to choose, you know, moving forward with your two very different parental experiences, what you want to do for your own kids. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but I just had to do it my way. I had to do it my way when they were with me, which was most of the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
That probably made it easier. If it had been a split 50-50, that might've been more difficult because they would have had half their lives going one way and half their lives going another way.
Right. Right. Exactly. So, you know, it's like a bad example, but when we go to mommy so-and-so's house, on Saturday, we'll have tacos and that'll be great because I love tacos. Not that I don't ever make them tacos, but you know, so like that's not a good example, but there would be things that they could then expect and look forward to, yeah, or whatever. They could have their own relationships and their own experiences with their other parent. But mm-hmm. So I was single for a few years and loved that time because it enabled me to just ground myself and figure out what I really did want in a relationship and what I deserved in a relationship and what I, you know, if at some point I met somebody, then that was going to be a really huge decision because I didn't want to screw that up again.
Yeah.
You know, and then I met my wife, Nancy, and we were friends for a while. And she was actually older. She's like 12 years older than me. So she's like 65 now and had been married to a man for 30 some years.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And yeah. And wow. So in like 2 years time, she came out, met me, well, and maybe not even in that order.
Met you.
came out. I think she said, I've been struggling with this my whole life. And now I am super good friends with this woman who has figured herself out and is so confident in who she is.
And that's
by that time I had become that, but you know, that took me years. Mm-hmm. Like you don't just be confident being a lesbian, like overnight.
No, you really don't.
And no, that is a journey. And so
taking a whole podcast. Well, here.
It is for the kids. It is for the kids, but for us at that time.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, she took a very brave step in her life and she ended up, she's Canadian. So she moved here to the United States. We got married and she was now a stepmom. She had no kids of her own and never saw herself as a mother.
And wow. it fit so well. And the relationship felt so right that she just slipped right in.
She said, I'm going to just sheer bravery.
Yeah, because twins, you know, like
sheer bravery.
There's a lot of stuff in that soup that she's stepping into.
So there's no question in our household who will be the most happy to send our kids away to college.
Yeah. But you know, love loves them. Love does crazy things to you. Love makes you ready for a lot more than you thought you ever could, you know?
Yeah. And she's been a wonderful, wonderful step parent to them. She has a very different parenting style than me. But it works. Like, I think it totally works. And so,
what's really cool is that you guys have this like reverse thing. Like, you get to send them off to college and then you two can like be alone together. It's like a whole totally for the first time. It's a different empty nest. It's almost like you'll step into this whole new phase of your relationship and get to like learn each other in a different way. I just got so excited for you.
Thank you, because I'm so excited for me too. And you know, we're going to have date nights again, except they're going to be like start at 4 p.m. and
early bird dinner.
That's the way they should be. Nobody needs to be out past nine. Nobody.
Yeah. And it's interesting seeing like I'm sure that families like ours, when the kids are growing up, the children are going to experience discrimination. They're going to have slurs said to them. Potentially, they're going to have experiences that are very negative about what their family looks like.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably the biggest fear that I had, you know, and they did. My son wrote one of his personal college essays on what it was like to grow up without a dad. And not just like a dad that's like, you know, deadbeat dad, not in the picture, whatever. Like, don't have a dad.
Yeah.
There's no one that fills that role. Well, I fill that role, and so many other men in his life, teachers and other mentors, have filled that role.
Right.
But he wrote about it, and it was really interesting to read.
I was going to say, was that hard to read?
I had to put my big girl pants on and just read it and be like, this is his experience. But it was, you know, I know that there were times it's like, I took him to, you know, his little Boy Scout troop, and, and he quit the Boy Scouts on his own, by the way. We were in the Boy Scouts for 3 years. And at one point he just looked at me and he said, what is this whole Boy Scout gay thing? Like, what's that all about? I don't even know. I see it on the news and whatever. And you know, he's 8 years old or whatever. What does that mean? And I says, well, Eli, basically it means that I could never be a den mother. Like, I wouldn't be welcomed in that situation. He says, well, I don't want to be in Boy Scouts anymore then. And he quit.
Maybe he'd go make me cry again.
I know. Oh,
that's so wonderful. I mean, it's not wonderful. It's horrible that they're homophobes, but it's wonderful that he had at eight, that he had that protective feeling toward you.
Like, well, then I don't want to do that anymore. Ugh. And you know, I tell the story to friends of mine here at work, know it very well, that when the kids were in kindergarten, they were doing a Mother's Day project. Mm-hmm. And the poor kindergarten teacher is just trying to manage the classroom. And so she looks at Eli and Ellie and she says, okay, you pick one mom and you pick one mom and go off and make your craft and that's it. Well, Mother's Day comes and the kids are like heartbroken.
Yeah. That,
yeah, my son comes up to me and says, I had to choose a mom. And so Ellie and I talked about it. And so I made, you know, this mom a gift and I don't have something for you. So I had a conversation with that teacher
for you
the very next day. And she was wonderful. She was like, she wrote me a note later and said, you've changed the way I think about teaching kids and understanding what families are all about. And I'm so sorry. You know, I'm so sorry. I didn't know.
A lot of times it's just not on their radar, right? Like,
it's just not on their radar.
Yeah.
So then Father's Day comes a month later and she's like, so what do I do? How do I handle this? And she was like, on the phone with me.
She came to you, right?
Yeah.
Which is what you do. Just,
What do I do, Lynn?
What do I do?
I'm going to call you, Lynn, when I need advice. What do I do, Lynn?
I says, they have grandpas. They can pick a grandpa.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and thank goodness it is. Hi, guys. It's Jamie here just to talk to you a little bit about stress and BetterHelp. As you all know, stress shows up in all kinds of ways, especially when you are transitioning a podcast like I am right now. Ovaries 2.0 is showing up. And in a world that is telling you to do more, sleep less, grind your teeth all the time, all of the above, which I'm doing, here's your reminder to take care of yourself, do less, and maybe try some therapy. I definitely need to revisit my therapy. I'm sure I could use to talk to somebody right about now, and I think we all could. Therapy helps. It really helps to have somebody to talk to. And I love BetterHelp because I don't even have to leave the comfort of my own home. I just get on that video chat, and I am chatting away right away. So you guys, BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So like I said, you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to as well. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy. Give it a try and see if online therapy can help lower your stress. And here's the good thing. If these ovaries could talk, listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/OCT. That's BETTERHELP.com/OCT. Let's all de-stress a little bit. Love you guys.
Now, fifth grade was another sort of a pivotal year because they had, my kids go to like a progressive private school. So it's very diverse and it's very accepting and it's kind of a little cocoonish, you know, to be honest, but in all the right ways. And so fifth grade, some new kids come to the class and my kids have, you know, myself, you know, they're from a two same gender family. And then they have their other friend, Eli, who has two moms. And then in fifth grade, their friend in fourth grade had a mom and a dad, but in fifth grade, mom is now dad. So has dad and a dad. Mm-hmm, there was a transition that happened. So they're all sitting around circle and they're talking about what they had done that summer. And this is the summer that Nancy and I got married. And so Eli's sharing this story with all of his friends. Here's what I did this summer. I got to like stand up in my parent, my, you know, I got a new stepmom and blah, 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 blah. And some inquisitive little shit says, well, what does your dad do? Or, you know, like whatever, like he was wanting to know. Dad. Yeah. Cause there's gotta be a dad. Like, was, right. You know, did your dad must've gotten remarried because you now have a new stepmom.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Eli said, no. My mom got married to a woman and I have a stepmom.
Mm-hmm.
And the little shit says, well, that's weird.
Ugh.
And like four or five of the other classmates immediately said, no, it's not.
Good.
I mean, the bubble is important.
Yeah.
I think sometimes for our families to have them in mm-hmm. a bubble or a space where they can see for the kids. It's helpful when you can.
And yet, you know, I do think all the time about kids all around the country and how well are we really accepted yet and what work still needs to be done. And kids today are dealing with, while it is very normal to at age 9, 10, 11, you know, certainly think about your sexuality and think about your gender and think about your gender expression mm-hmm. and like all of that and the pronouns, holy smokes with the pronouns. And yet I'm trying to be as progressive as I wish my parents had been
mm-hmm.
in understanding the youth today and what their struggles are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you guys are feeling about it, but it's like their world is not our world.
We're feeling like a couple of old lesbians who stay at home yes. for Taco Tuesday. And we're like, what are these changes these kids are doing? Like it's, you know,
yeah,
but it's wonderful. It's they have all the things we said we wanted for, you know, but it's hard to process that.
Yeah, they do.
Most of the things.
Most of them do. And then you see the junk that happens in Florida and right, you think, yeah. Wait.
Yeah, that's the bubble, right? Like,
yeah,
right.
It's like, sorry, I put my flag down for a second. Let me pick it back up.
I know.
Clearly,
the fight is not over.
There's more work to be done.
So it's like work. We still have to, we talk all the time about how intentional we have to be as parents. And it starts with the path and the journey and the way in which you choose to make your family. But it also continues with how and where you live and what you put into place to make sure that there is the safety around them. Because we know these things like the little shit that you refer to, those kids are coming.
And even in these bubbles.
They're coming. Yeah. They're in the bubble. Yeah. They're in the bubble.
In these bubbles, kids. I've experienced statements like that from kids in our bubble, you know.
Yeah.
But in fairness, though, there's little shits everywhere, even if your kids aren't gay. Your parents, I mean, you know what I mean? Like there's like my old boss, we had this one coworker who was a little difficult. And let's just say her name is, Jill for this. And he would say, wherever you go, there's a Jill. And that's really true. There's always going to be, they're archetypes and there's a little shit. You got to learn to deal with little shits.
And then you realize based on the things the kids are starting to, like my daughter came home a couple weeks ago and she was pissed off about something. And she said, that's so gay. And we were like,
my son did that. I looked at him.
Yeah. She has no idea what she's saying. It's just what the kids are saying. But then you realize, interesting that the kids are saying this and the parents aren't checking it.
I will say that like there's this like kids code switch too. And I hear how my kids talk when they're on headphones. And the one thing that kids don't ever get, or maybe they get it like at way too late of an age, that we can hear you. Like they talk in the back seat and they think we can't hear them. But the way they talk on screens and Discord on whatever is so different than the way they talk around parents. They know enough to do that. And that's a vernacular that lives. So it may not be the parents' fault. It may not be they're coming home saying that. I mean,
that's true.
It may be, but it may not be.
It may not be. Obviously, I'm like a content media producer. And so I work in public media and for a reason. And I think that part of that is because I feel like media is the most powerful thing that this country has that can lift it up or shoot it down. Mm-hmm. And our kids see it. They do still see it in the media. You know, we're trying to make strides. We're starting to make strides, but it's just not there completely. And then I do think that there are in what I call the underbelly, there are these folks that I think recent years have shown us they're willing to come out and spew their craziness.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Spew their anger and spew their hate.
Yep.
And so I see that like there's a resurgence of it. And so our kids are having to deal with that.
Yeah. They get a platform. They get a strong platform.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I said to my son when he said that to me, that's so gay. I like shot him this look and immediately he was like, what do I do? And I said, you just said that's so gay. And he's like, yeah, but you know, I said, no, we're going to talk about this. That is not acceptable in this house.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I would hope that it's not even acceptable for you as a person if you think long enough about it. And, you know, now he says it to rile me, like to, he, you know, because he knows it's like going to push a button for me, right? But we try so hard to have our families, you know, don't we?
We work so hard. We're so
intentional. We try so hard to have our families. Why anyone in this world would think that we weren't worthy of that experience just boggles my mind every day.
And you
come live in my house for 24 hours.
Exactly. We're very loving families. Even though we yell at our kids and we get pissed off, we're still
We are normal families.
Yes, we are. And that's comes normal. Back to your point, Lynn, about media and how media really shapes society and how if only they would give our families more space in the media, our lives more space in the media, then maybe the rest of the world would get on board and see this is nothing. This is normal.
This is so nothing.
But we're not given a platform.
No. You guys have created one.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I'm so glad that you're coming and sharing your story with us today because you just, you gave a whole another view of representation that people can look to and say, oh, you know, that's why I'm so glad that you came and told us your story today.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you guys invited me.
Oh my God, are you kidding?
We're just lucky to have you. So lucky.
I feel like you should tell people to watch all your content. Where can they watch what you've done?
Oh, okay.
And also, can they watch the Muskets?
they can watch the Musket documentary. They absolutely can. But I work for Buffalo Toronto Public Media, and I'm in the content division. But we have PBS, we have NPR, we have, you know, all kinds of things. I just finished a documentary on Kleinhans Music Hall, which is really just a beautiful, beautiful space here in Buffalo. It's been around for 82 years, but the show with the Muskets is called Fort Niagara, The Struggle for a Continent.
And that is when the miracle of life happened.
And that is where the miracle of life happened.
I feel like everyone has to watch that.
Reenacting a war.
Everyone has to watch that documentary and then picture sperm swimming inside of your business.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, Lynn.
Oh, Lynn.
I'm telling you.
I really enjoyed talking to Lynn.
I know. She's amazing. That lady could tell a story, which I mean, I guess is a good thing since that's what she does for a living.
She ran that interview. We didn't have to do anything.
She did. We were like, why are we here? She's like, honestly, you're actually slowing the flow of the interview. And we were like, we know.
Can you stop interrupting?
We could have talked to her for hours.
I have the storyboard done. I know what I'm saying.
She's like, we're in the middle of act two right now. If you guys could really stop, you're slowing it down. Oh God. She just amazing.
Sat back with some popcorn. Yeah. I mean, just another lesbian creating great kids and sending them out in the world. I mean, who doesn't need more of those?
Right?
We need all those. All the queers need to raise the kids because we know what we're doing. I'm gonna say
I don't know. Do we?
Yes. I don't know. I mean, not me.
All right. Stay in touch on the social media people. Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. If These Ovaries Could Talk on YouTube, and you're going to support the podcast and join the community, a Patreon at patreon.com/ovariestalk. Don't forget about that bonus content.
Don't forget. We're putting up that bonus content, and I'm open to putting more. You just let me know what you need. And we have to say a huge thank you to our sponsor, BetterHelp. And one more time, a huge thank you to all the Patreons who are helping us make this show. We really thank you, and we couldn't do it without you.
That's right. And now one more, Jamie. One more together.
Oh. That makes me sad.
Like a weird dog sound.
Eggs.
Ovaries. Out.
We have one more. We have one more together, one guys. More. One more.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.